Session number 12935, Peter Thompson, Reel 1.
Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in Fulham, in London, in 1925, the 6th of June.
What did your father do for a living?
He had a greengrocery business whilst we lived in Fulham, and then he went on the buses as a bus conductor.
Did you go to school in Fulham?
No. I moved to Barnes when I was 2 years old. In 1927.
So you went to school there?
And I went to school in Barnes, yes.
How old were you when you left?
When I left school?
Yes.
I was 13 and a half, because when the war broke out, I was 13 and a half, and everybody was evacuated, so there was no schools to go to. There was just a few people that weren't evacuated, and I was one of them.
Why weren't you evacuated?
Because my parents didn't want me evacuated.
Did they tell you the reasons?
No, not really. They just said they didn't want to sort of be separated, and they preferred us all to be together.
Did that suit you?
Yes. I was quite willing, you know. The thing was that at that time, it was an in-between period when there was no school and there was also no work to do, because as soon as the war came, people weren't making things for the civilian population. They were turning over to war work. And there wasn't a lot of work about at that time, so I was out of work for a year after turning 14.
Did you see much of the blitz of the bombing in 1940?
Oh, yes. This is the one thing I would, you know, like to say, that I used to go and help to put out firebombs and rescue people from shelters and bomb houses, but never got the defence medal, because I was too young to belong to any organisation, and consequently I wasn't entitled to it.
So but you just went around off your own bat?
Just as a young boy, or young man after the time, going around and helping the air raid wardens and the police and that to rescue people and put out fires and...
Whereabouts was this?
This was at Barnes. This is on the Castlenor Estate in Barnes, just near Hammersmith Bridge.
Can you describe any incidents from doing that happened to you?
Oh, yes, I can describe that where we went into my friend's house, Alan Brigham, and the bomb had fallen in his garden and almost destroyed the Anderson Air Raid shelter. I remember getting his mother and his sister out of the air raid shelter and them being taken to hospital. And one of them had died after the consequence of the bomb. The sister died.
What did you see once you got to the shelter?
Well, they were just sort of blown to pieces, sort of thing. They were all... You know, the whole thing was upturned and blown, bits blown all over the place into the garden. And other occasions where we went in and fought the fires in the roofs with the incendiary bombs.
How did you do that?
Well, we used to go up with Stuart pumps or bags of sand or buckets of water, you know, and try and put them out. But they were very difficult to put out because they were made of, I forget what it was now, I don't know, I can't remember.
Magnesium.
And even though you threw water onto them, they still kept burning. But that's why we used to take bags of sand around with us and that sort of thing to try and get them out. But... we had a bomb in the front garden, which disrupted all the water mains and the gas mains. And which were, you know, disrupted the whole street. And we had several bombs in the street and all round that, as I say, knocked down houses and killed people and that sort of thing.
What was your street called?
My street was called Noel Road, N-O-W-E-L-L, Road. And it was on the Castlenor Estate in Barnes.
Was it a frightening time for you or exciting?
No, it was exciting. Exciting because, I was young and perhaps I was just following the round, you know, the people, but I was helping them as well where I could to get things out of the way and to get people out of, you know, wherever the house is and that. But it's never a frightening time. It is, what could you say? Yeah, but it's exciting, you know. It was good to be running around and trying to help people and to help the firemen and the RIP men.
Did it make you hate the Germans?
Well, at the time, yes. I mean, I did think, you know, that these were horrible people that were trying to hurt us. But consequently, after the war, we became very friendly with Germans. But during that period, that people were dropping things on us to kill us, I did feel that I didn't think much of them, didn't like them. And I don't think I hated them, because you never saw them at that time. You just saw a plane and the searchlight up in the air with that cat trying to get it down, and then all of a sudden you'd hear the whistle of the bombs, and they would kill somebody or, you know, destroy the houses or, yeah.
Did you ever see any planes shot down?
Oh, yes.
What do you remember about that?
Well, it's just that they were, I saw planes shot down and the pilots bail out, and the planes came crashing to the ground, and then the airmen were captured by the Home Guard, or they gave themselves up to a civilian sometimes, you know.
Did you ever see any of the captured aircrew?
No. No, you heard about it after the next day sort of thing, because this was mostly during the night.
Did people want to get at them and harm them?
I never heard of this, no. I have heard of people in different areas wanted to, you know, get at them, but I've never heard of this locally where I lived or anything.
What was public morale like under the bombing?
Well, I think it was very good. It was people were afraid. They used to go run into their shelters, and in fact, they didn't have to have an air raid siren. They just used to go and sleep in the shelter all night anyway, because they knew darn well there was going to be an air raid, and so they went there every night, you know. They weren't very pleased about that, you know. They said, "Oh, blooming nuisance," you know, but that was about all they commented on it.
So did you ever hear people who wanted to give in?
Oh, no. I never heard of anything like that. No.
What did you do once you heard the sirens go?
Well, we used to go into the air raid shelter, but once it started, we used to come out and help them, help, you know, all the way around to do all we could. As I say, to go get people out of bombed houses and that sort of thing.
Did any VIPs come round to try to raise morale?
No. Never. I never remember anybody.
People sometimes say that we were all one in those days. Do you think it's true?
Oh, yes, very much so. Everybody helped everybody else. There was never any query or any doubt. They would go and, the women would go and help to clear the house out and put it to straight as much as they could, with people that just got the glass and everything blown out the windows and the window frames all blown out and that sort of thing. And the women would all go together and help one another, and the morale was very good in that respect.
Did you ever wish you had been evacuated away from it all?
No. No, I was pleased I wasn't evacuated.
Did you get tired and worn out because of the lack of sleep?
No, I can't remember ever being tight. No. No.
Did you ever go into the middle of London to see the damage?
Oh, no. 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 I went to Hammersmith and places like that, which were just over the bridge, which is London, but not right in the heart of London. And no.
How did the bombing in Hammersmith compare with Barnes?
It's more. There's a lot more damage in Hammersmith than there was in Barnes. Even though it's only just across the water, in Barnes it seemed that we were on the fringe of London, and consequently the further you got out, the less bombing you got.
What happened to you after the Blitz?
Well, I got called up then. I got called up at 17 and three quarters into the Navy, and went to Skegness, where I did my basic training, and then came back to Chatham, waiting for a draft onto aboard a ship.
What was your basic training like? How did you cope with it?
Oh, very well. Another thing I enjoyed, because there was real camaraderie there, there was real friendship, and everybody got on very well together.
So you were called up in 43, were you?
43, yeah. Yes.
How did you feel about going into the Navy as opposed to the other services?
I wanted to go into the Navy. I asked, you know, that was my choice.
Why was that?
Because I felt that there was no... yes, it was a reason. I probably wanted to be a sailor. I wanted to be in the Navy as opposed to being in the Army and the Air Force.
Which branch did you go into?
I went into seaman.
And what was your first ship?
My first ship was LST 304.
Can you tell me about joining the ship?
I left Chatham and went down to Portsmouth and picked it up at Portsmouth. They hadn't long been back from the invasions in the Mediterranean, Salerno and Anzio and other places. And they came back, and I was transferred from, drafted from Chatham Barracks to 304 to replace other members that were taken off primary, I think, for a rest, because they've had a very hectic time out in the Mediterranean. And they transferred some of the men off and put other newer men on.
About when do you think you joined it? Which month? Still 43?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. No, it's probably the beginning of 43, January 43, that I joined her.
So you must have been called up in 42?
44, rather. January 44, sorry.
Can you tell me about the kind of crew and officers that were on board when you joined?
Yes, there's a crew of about 66 men and 12 officers, but this was enlarged. When we were preparing for the invasion, we had about 20 Marines and other Matlows that came on as stretcher bearers and medics and things like that. And we also, in the tank deck, they'd built a little operating theatre, and so consequently we had surgeons on board as well that used to do operations when we picked up the wounded. But the Lieutenant Commander Throttingham, he was a very quiet man, kept very much to himself, but he was a good skipper. The other men, the first lieutenant and that, I can't remember their names, but they were all quite nice, quite good. They were disciplinarians, but they were very good. They were fair disciplinarians. They ran the ship as they should run it, you know. And I got on very well on board ship.
What duties were you expected to carry out aboard?
Seamanship duties such as tank, down in the tank deck, getting it prepared for. Because when we landed, we used to unload all our tanks and ducks and lorries and what have you, and then along the bulkheads of the ship were three-tiered bunks, and we used to fill them up with wounded soldiers or sailors or anybody wounded, and also along the tank deck on the floor, and perhaps we'd have about 400 wounded on board to bring back to England. And these men were, as I say, there was operations going on, all sorts of things going on, and we were doing all this sort of thing, preparing it all and helping and getting ready to go back to sea again.
Now, for those people who don't know what an LST is, can you say what the letters stand for and give a description of it?
An LST is the landing ship tank. It is 327 foot long and it's 50 foot wide, 50 foot berth. This ship is made to take 20 40-ton tanks in the tank deck, and it has a hoist just inside the bow doors that when we've loaded up with tanks in the low deck, the lorries and Bren gun carriers and smaller transport was taken up on the hoist and spread over the top of the tank top deck to... ready to go to sea. It had 20 millimeter guns and 40 millimeter guns forward of the bridge and aft, and had a 3-inch gun on the stern. It had a crew of, when we sailed for D-Day, I should say, 100 men and about 24 officers, including the surgeons and that sort of thing. That was crew. But we would carry also the lorries and tanks and all their crews, which would be sometimes another 250, 300 men.
Were there any facilities aboard for the crew?
Oh, yes, we had our own messes. The ship's crew usually messed at the stern of the ship, but along each side, starboard and port and starboard, there were what they called the troop accommodation, where all the troops used to go, because they weren't allowed to stay in their vehicles in the tank deck. They had to come out of the tank deck, and they slept in the troops' quarters.
How did the ship sail? Comfortably or not?
No. They're one of the worst ships there are, because they are flat-bottomed, and the draft, when they're loaded, is it's not too bad. But when they're light, they're sort of 4'6" in the bows and about 10 foot in the stern, and they used to, in bad weather, they used to roll and rock and dip all over the place. They were very hard to handle. Lots of times they would bump into something, you know, especially going into harbour, they'd hit another ship, or if a gust of wind took it, it hit another ship and it'd do a little superficial damage most of the time, but sometimes it tore great holes in the sides where it gone into something that was protruding, which meant it going into dry dock again and having something else under it. They're very well known for their hard handling. It was never a good, never an easy job for a skipper to maintain a regular course. When she was going in pretty flat weather, she was not too bad, but once you got a bit of a wind, it's wind more than anything that used to carry her all over the place. because they were high-sided. I would think it was most of the time about 30 foot from the water's edge to the top of the ship, to the top deck. And this was a very big wind factor that used to sort of carry it everywhere and anywhere.
So there must have been a lot of seasickness aboard.
Oh yes, yeah. The soldiers were glad to get off and fight. They used to just they were terrible for them. They used to, even the crew, I mean, if you've got a new member of the crew come on and he'd been on something else, because these ships, they're not like a destroyer. A destroyer dips most of the time, but with a LST, it not only dips, it rolls and flaps, and it comes up right up in the sea and hits the sea, and you hear a terrific flap, bang. They just went where the wind and the sea took them. They never sort of, and as I say, consequently, the poor soldiers were.
So when you joined the ship, what duties was the ship carrying out? Was it training?
Oh yes, we did a lot of practice beachings and taking various regiments or parts of regiments on training exercises up in Scotland or around the south coast, and you know, all over the place, and transporting different regiments down from Scotland to say Southampton, or taking somebody round to Tilbury, because a lot of the men on the D-Day, they started from Tilbury. So we were taking them round there and train. It was all part of the training for the men and the ship.
Any incidents that happened in the course of the training that stick out in your mind?
No, just latterly, I suppose, the doodle bugs. You know, we used to see them go over, but that was more in the invasion than... You know, after we started the invasion, we met the doodlebug problems. But other than that, no, everything went pretty well. There was incidents, you know, where soldiers were hurt that their lorries would sort of go off the end of the ramp at a too steep an angle, or sometimes when you've been landing lorries and tanks and troops onto the beach gets very soft. And consequently, that wheels dig holes into the sand, and a lorry would go down and not be able to get out of it, and we'd had to get a bulldozer or another tank to pull it out or something like that. And men would get hurt because it's very hard. It's a very hard job on a landing ship because it's all very heavy work where you've got to really. Not be tough, but it tries your strengths to try and help men who are not used to doing this sort of thing to get it right and get them off properly, and in the consequence that they do get hurt and they get taken to hospital, or some men crush their hands, some men crush their feet. Some men get crushed in between a tank and a lorry or something like that. You know, there's always something happening where this is what the training was for, I suppose, to get it right. But in each exercise we did, there was probably something that happened in that way.
Did you have anybody killed or seriously injured?
No, not even seriously injured. Hurt, yes, but not... Not beyond sort of repair, that they couldn't go to hospital for a couple of days or a week and then come back to their unit and carry on.
Was there an atmosphere of preparing for something really big?
Oh, yes, yes. We all knew there was something going to happen pretty soon. And we were all waiting for the day, and we were all saying to one another, you know, we said, hurry up and get it out. Because it was a thing that... nobody really looked forward to, because you didn't know what was going to happen, but it was a thing that you wanted to happen so that you'd know what was going to happen afterwards. It had everybody on edge. to know, you know, when the day would be and what it would be like.
What were your own speculations about D-Day, about when and where it would be?
Well, to be quite honest, security and secrets were very good. They were kept very well, and nobody really knew where it might happen. I mean, I think the logic then was that the shortest distance across would be the place where we would land.
So you didn't really have Normandy in mind?
Oh, no, no. I've never heard that sort of mentioned as a place where it might happen. It was always Cherbourg, Dover, opposite Dover, the
Calais.
Areas opposite to Calais and all that area. Yeah, but not...
Now, can you take me through the preparations for D-Day and into D-Day step by step in as much detail as you can remember as far as it affected you personally, please?
Well, I think possibly the training and the landings, the practice landings that we did, and it was hard. It was hard work. Everybody used to moan about, you know, being put to the test sort of every day, because it wasn't many days that we weren't at sea and taking some troops in or pulling some troops out, because we not only took them ashore, we also... I don't know whether it was a preparation for D-Day, in case something did happen, that we also trained to take men off of beaches for preparation of a setback or something like that, I should think. But we had various cargoes, if you'd like to call them cargoes, but I mean, we'd be carrying bulldozers or tanks or guns or... And sometimes you carry the Air Force as a forwarding station for air crews. When we landed, they would go and sort of, there'd be an airstrip to build. And you used to build an airstrip and that sort of thing.
But you went across on D-Day itself. Can you take me through the day before, what you remember of the day before D-Day?
Well, the day before, we were just laying off of the Isle of Wight in the Solent, loaded, already loaded. We loaded about 3 days before the actual day, because it's going to be on the 5th anyway. But we loaded, we went on to the Hard at Gosport and loaded. We loaded lorries and grain carriers and that on the upper deck. Then we loaded about 10 tanks, and then we loaded about 10 ducks. And, I mean, everything used to be loaded. It went on, reversed to what it came off, so that the first things that were needed first went off first. And as I say, we loaded them 3 days before, and then just went out from the Solent and sat there waiting for the day to come, which that was when we knew them. Not where we were going, but there was something big going to happen then. But we were allowed to go ashore, the crew. The soldiers weren't allowed to go ashore. And weren't allowed to come on the mainland. We used to go ashore in the Isle of Wight, just for a run ashore. And an interesting...